This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I'm really excited about today's guest, Nadine Macaluso, referred to as Dr. Nay. She's a psychologist, author, and former model. She's the second wife of the stockbroker and financial criminal, Jordan Belfort. Referred to as Duchess of Baybridge by the press, her marriage was the subject of Belfort's memoir and subsequent hit movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, which I'm hoping that you saw. If you didn't, you need to go see it. It's a great movie. And the basis for Margot Robbie's character, Naomi. She is now a therapist with expertise in trauma bonding and narcissistic abuse. She has a book coming out. It's called Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. I pick her brain on finding love, identifying red flags, and making better choices in all of our relationships, a spouse, a friend, a parent. She also breaks down what a true narcissist is. I learned so much from her, and I know you guys will too. So sit back and listen to Nadine Macaluso. Dr. Nay, thank you for joining me here on Misunderstood.
I'm so happy to be here. We've been trying to do this for a while.
Yes, for sure. Well, before I even started my podcast, you were someone I had on my list because I thought what you represent is so important to people. You know, people that are in a situation that is misunderstood, and what you've been doing on your social media is so important, telling people about who you became. I think that, you know, for women and their credibility, it's taken away sometimes by a man, sometimes by a situation. And I think that the way that you have become somebody who stands on your own two feet is super impressive. And you've made your life about in the past, about who you are in the future, but in a totally different way. You've taken your experience and made it into something that people can learn from. So I think that that's really important.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start with getting into, obviously people know you because your life was made into a movie. But I think I wanted to start a little bit before that of like, who were you before you met Jordan?
Oh, I like that question. Yeah, that's a good one. So I was raised in Brooklyn, New York in the 70s by a single mother. And what a nice time that was.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the 70s and 80s, you know? So I had a really simple, easy childhood. But I didn't grow up with a lot of money. And, you know, being close to New York City, I realized I need money to live. And so I became a model, not because that's what I wanted to do, but I need money to live. And so I was living in New York City, actually in Brooklyn Heights, with my best friend modeling. Having fun, running around the city, and then boom, I met JB.
So what was your experience with men before him?
Oh, I was dating every rich playboy in the city.
Got it. So you had a type.
I had a type. And those successful guys in the city in the 80s and 90s, we called them model mongers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like obsessed with dating a model.
Of course.
So it was a kind of a good connection or not good. But yeah, I was just having a lot of fun going to Studio 54, listening to Madonna.
Right.
You know, just being a young, naive girl in the city.
Right. And how did you meet Jordan?
So I met him just like they show in the movie. I went to his home in West Hampton on Dune Road with my boyfriend at the time.
Okay. How did you guys get an invite? Did your boyfriend at the time know him?
Yes, I think my boyfriend got an invite.
Got it.
You know, and then we just showed up.
But had you heard of him before? Somebody? So it wasn't somebody that you were impressed by and you were like, have to be with this guy.
I knew nothing about him, nothing about the people he hung out with. No, just random.
And what was your first impression of him?
You know, it sounds mean to say, but I'm not trying to. I just didn't even notice him, really, because I was there with my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. But what I did notice, of course, he was nice and came up and said hello. But what happened is when I went there, I could just tell everybody was acting very strange. Mm. And little did I know they were all on Quaaludes.
Oh, goodness.
You know, but I didn't know that back then. And then one man, you know, showed himself to me, and I got mortified as a young 22-year-old girl, felt super uncomfortable, and said to my boyfriend, "We must leave immediately."
Got it. So now, he was married at the time, right?
He was, correct.
But he decided that you were the thing he wanted, and he pursued you heavily.
Yes, he did.
So that's accurate.
Yes, it is accurate. Yeah. And, you know, at 22 years old, and I'm not saying this to make an excuse, he had set me up with, like, he created a setup for me to meet him. Mm. And I remember saying to the woman, she said, "Jordan's coming." I was like, "Isn't that weird? He's married." Mm-hmm. She's like, "What do you care?" And I said, "No, I don't care. I just think it's strange." So there was that in the beginning. And then we had dinner at Mezzaluna. Mm-hmm. And he told me he was separated. He had an apartment in the city. He was separated, but he was married at the time. But I don't think at 22,
right,
I really understood all that.
And how long did you guys end up dating before you two got married?
Oh, it was fast and furious. A lot of love bombing going on there. Mm-hmm. So we got engaged 6 months later and married 6 months after that.
Oh, wow. And he was able to get a divorce that quickly?
I guess.
Because these days you hear it takes years and decades sometimes for men to get a divorce.
He was able to get a divorce very quickly. And yeah.
So let's talk about what love bombing is. Because, you know, what is the difference between someone who really likes you and is treating you in a healthy way and wants to give you nice things and love bombing?
Well, the thing about love bombing is it's very intense and it's at a very fast pace. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so over the top. So it's so many gifts. It's so much, "I love you. You're the air I breathe. You're my soulmate." I mean, you really don't know that about somebody 2 weeks into meeting them.
Yeah.
But the person will tell you all those things. And of course, does that feel good? Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of future faking. Oh, we're going to move in together. We're going to plan this trip. And there's just a real fast and furious, intense pace that the relationship occurs at.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like, because I know this has happened to me, and so we both know it, but for people listening, you know, is there, can you say that you actually get to know someone that quickly, or are you in love with the fact that they are giving you all these things and making you feel special and important, but, you know, at the same time, you forget that you're missing out on knowing who they are, knowing how they are in a bad situation, know how they speak to people, know relationship, things that are really important to get to know someone as opposed to how they make you feel.
Yes, exactly. I think that's a good way to say it. And again, it does feel good. Mm-hmm. And I was so young. I mean, I was absolutely clueless.
Yeah.
And it's the way that you feel when you're with them.
Right.
And it's almost like they don't want to give you time to get to know them.
Yeah. Yeah,
right? They want to lock you in.
Right. And it's interesting. So I have suffered from love addiction. I have been, you know, I've gone on tour with Dr. Drew and talked about it. I was on Celebrity Rehab for love addiction.
Yeah.
It sounds very similar to what you call trauma bonding, I guess. It's when people mistake intensity for love. And people tend to be, you know, really open to that, who are really, I don't want to say damaged from their past, but sort of. I mean, it's people that really feel like they need someone to rescue them or feel like they are incomplete without someone doing that. And for me, I felt like I, you know, my level of credibility was who was on my arm or how they made me feel or how much they loved me. And it wasn't about whether or not they were a good guy or right for me. And if I was even right for them, sometimes I would give up who I was to be with them because it made me feel loved. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's all signs of love addiction. And you usually pick the wrong
person. But that sounds a lot like, you know, what people who are dealing with the wrong person are getting into. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, that's where we get into a slippery slope, mm-hmm. because not all women who fall for men such as this have had traumatic pasts.
Right.
So that's what my book actually is about, that there's a lot of research on that, that they actually haven't had traumatic pasts. They're just usually highly agreeable women and highly conscientious women, women that want to do the right thing, women that are tolerant, women that are loyal, women that are very want to have an integrity-oriented life. Mm-hmm. But those beautiful qualities actually get weaponized. Mm. And the second thing that I'd like to say about that is that, you know, look at the media, look at the myths we've been fed about love. You know, I mean, growing up, Pretty Woman, you know, was a movie that, of course, was in my time. And we've been taught that someone's going to come save us and rescue us, right? So it's a real complex
mix. Every Disney
fantasy. Someday my prince will come. Yeah. I mean, guess what? No, but no, ain't no prince coming.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I think it's multiple causality. Now, yes, do some women, of course, have developmental trauma and have traumatic pasts? Yes. But not all.
Right. And it doesn't have to be trauma with like a capital T.
No,
it doesn't have to
be
something
neglect,
major.
Yeah. Neglect, you know, only having one parent at home.
Exactly.
Right? But I didn't have abuse in my home. Mm-hmm. My mother was very loving. We talked about feelings all the time. She was very psychological. Now, my dad was in and out of my life, but I was never abused.
Right.
And so that's kind of why I went back to the research, because I was like, wait, there's something missing here.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good point. So anybody is susceptible. And nobody.
Anybody and everybody.
Yeah. And nobody is immune to falling for the wrong person.
Nobody.
Yeah.
So that also takes the blame off the victim.
Yeah. Right. So let's get back a little bit to what was true about your life in the movie and what wasn't.
Oh, boy. Okay. That's, let me go back. So what was true? So what was true was the amount of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan and I really fought about his drug addiction. That was very true and very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
The ironic thing, and I always get a kick out of this, is that we never fought about women.
Mm. Oh, yeah. They made it seem like
they
that
made
was a
it
big
seem
part.
Like
yeah.
that's what we fought about. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't. I'm not a jealous woman. I didn't know any of the stuff he was doing.
Right.
And so, but, you know, that's how they portrayed. I never threw water in his face. I mean, I probably should have.
Right.
But I never did that. So that's really the main differences and the truth.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were married 8 years. Am I correct?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you finally decide that you needed to get out or you needed a change?
Yeah. So, you know, the research shows that a woman tries to leave a trauma bond about 7 times before she's able to leave.
Wow.
So I, you know, I had children with him, mm-hmm. and I have 2 beautiful children, mm-hmm. and they're wonderful. And so, you know, it's hard to leave with children. But his drug addiction was just getting so insane. And I said to him, I'm not going to sit here and watch you die.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna, like all these sycophants who just suck off of you and... I'm like, I actually love you and care about you, and I'm not, so you need to go to rehab. And he didn't want to go to rehab. And I went to a drug counselor with him, and then he didn't come back the next day, of course. And she told me, if you do not leave this man or he doesn't get an intervention, you're going to get cancer. And those words were just snapped me out of whatever trance I was in. And I went home that day, and I said to him, I'm leaving you unless you get an intervention. And he went crazy, doing my clothing and jewelry in the fireplace. He was on drugs. I probably shouldn't have said it at that moment, but I had had it. And that's kind of the scene that you see in the movie where it's not, the way they show it isn't actually what happened. It was actually when I confronted him about his drug addiction.
Right.
So that was a very violent scene, as you saw in the movie, you know, with my daughter. We all made it out okay, but he did go to rehab.
Oh, God.
So that was great, but...
How many times did he have to go to rehab?
Once.
Oh, wow.
He did great. You know, he's that type of person. When he puts his mind to it, he does it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after all of the emotional abuse and the drug addiction and that really pivotal moment in my life, I really fell out of love with him.
Right, right. So that emotional bond wasn't necessarily there to keep you. Because I think that is a lot what keeps people. We'll get into that more in general in a little bit. So you finally got up, left, took your kids and went somewhere else across the country.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, how did you do that? And I mean, I think that is what really prevents a lot of people from leaving, because they don't have a career. They don't have money.
Yes.
They have kids that are dependent on them, and they have never had to handle everything on their own. How did you do it?
Well, the
besides being ready for it, because you were emotionally ready.
While I was married to him, I had started a maternity company.
Okay.
So I had my own little business, which I think had helped me build a lot of confidence through the last years of our marriage. And so I had that going. And then I met a person who lived in California, my current husband now, 24 years. And so he said to me, you know, he'd like me to move, but I couldn't move because of Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. But then Jordan actually ended up in jail because he decided to take a helicopter to Atlantic City while he was wearing an ankle bracelet.
Oh.
So.
Smart.
Yeah. So the
entitled.
So the judge actually, when we presented that he wasn't even around and the government was taking everything I owned, so I was able to move, and I would say
out
I took my
state.
Kids and my curtains.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. But there was no money to take.
No, there was no money. I didn't take any money.
Right.
I actually, when he got arrested, he had $10 million in bail. I gave back all my homes. I drove all my jewelry to the court, gave it all back, and took no money.
So that must have been so scary, going from one life to nothing.
You know, it was scary, but remember, I was also 31,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was still kind of young and dumb,
mm-hmm.
and I still kind of thought I could do anything. And it was scary, but my mother taught me this. She said, you know, when she was married to my dad, and she said that was destructive pain, but when she left him and it was hard to live, that was constructive pain.
Mm.
And I like that. And that was very hard and very scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was emotionally overwhelmed many, many days, but I don't know, just something within me was like, there's a better life than this, and I don't care about the money. I just want happiness and peace.
Right.
That's worth $1 billion.
And it sounds like for the first time you were in control, and that must have been really empowering. Whether or not you knew it at that age, you know, looking back now, you were making your first decisions on your own.
I was making my decisions, and I'd been in therapy for a while, so I was really learning to trust myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a very important skill to develop.
Right.
And you develop that in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there was a myriad of things. Also, I was just so happy to be done with that life.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned that you had met someone who ultimately became your husband.
Yes.
How did you know at the time, as young as you were, that you were picking or depending on a new man who would be the right type of man? Because you've now been married for over 2 decades, right?
Yeah, we've been married for a long time.
Yeah.
We had a blended family, a Brady Bunch. Well, one of the first signs, and this is great for your audience to know, we had our first disagreement, and he said to me, oh, I hear that. I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Mm.
I was like, wait, you hear me? You understand me? Misunderstood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, I get it. And I was like, wow.
So you knew he was different.
I could tell he was different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you meet him?
I met him on a blind date.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So somebody was setting you
somebody
up.
Somebody set me up.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So when Jordan came out with this book, which was what ultimately turned into a movie, how did you feel knowing that someone was writing about your life?
Oh, that was not fun. You know,
were you on good terms with him at the time?
Yeah, okay. Jordan and I have always really been on good terms.
Okay.
That's one thing that I really can say about us. We've had our moments for sure. We're two strong-willed people,
mm-hmm.
but we've been able to be on good terms. So when he gave me the book, I'm very dramatic. So I read it and I called him up. I was like, why did you do this? Oh my God, I can't believe you did this. He's like, no, I did it for us. I was like, no, you didn't do it for me. But he did it for himself, and I understand that. He's a bright man. He needed mm-hmm. to rebuild himself. But I, like, threw it, you know, cried in bed. My husband comes in. He's like, time to get up.
Oh, my goodness. But because you were embarrassed or because he had embellished the truth?
Because he had embellished some mm-hmm. of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, because it was so hard to live through that Greek tragedy of my life.
Sure.
And then to see it again through his lens, which wasn't even my lens or narrative, again, was painful.
Did he write you as a fantasy of how he saw you?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, because here you were represented by Margot Robbie, yes. who's everyone's fantasy, men and women, I think.
Right.
Which that at least must have been exciting for you.
You know, just like everything in life, it's a paradox. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was lovely and I got to meet her because mm-hmm. they wanted my accent. But it's not the funnest thing being compared to the most beautiful woman in the world.
I'm sure.
Who's 20 years younger. But I'm kidding.
Right.
I'm just being funny about that. But yeah, I mean, that was what it was. And so I was not happy. But I went to therapy. I surrendered into it. Mm-hmm. And then, then he decides to get a movie made.
Right. So they decide that the book was interesting enough to make a movie and then have Leonardo DiCaprio and Margot Robbie,
yeah.
two, you know, most beautiful people.
Yeah.
When you met her, incidentally, did you think this girl's going to be a star? Because that really put her on the map, right?
You know, when I met her, I didn't really know. I mean, she was lovely and beautiful, and they taped my accent because they wanted this ridiculous, you know, Brooklyn accent. I didn't really know, and it was a very interesting time in my life because I actually flew into New York to take my daughter to college. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of surreal. I'm like, wait, I'm meeting this girl who's going to play me, and then I'm taking my daughter to college, you know?
Did you have any idea, you or Jordan, that it was going to be such a hit?
Oh,
like
I
people
had no
are
idea.
Still watching it to this
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I know. It's number two on Netflix because they just really, I had no idea.
Right.
I mean, but I should have known knowing Jordan. He goes big or goes home.
Right, exactly. So did you go to a movie premiere?
I did not go to the movie premiere, but I did send my children to it.
How do they feel about it?
You know, my kids are just well-adjusted, great kids. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, that's dad.
Right.
You know? Because I had already spoken to them ad nauseum about our past,
right.
and we had processed it so much. So they weren't surprised, and they love their dad, and he's a good dad. And, you know, first they maybe had a feeling, but then they were like, okay, pass the salt. I mean, they didn't.
Right.
They didn't.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro. Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
There.
So they ended up being able to realize that there was some truth to it. It was based on a true story, but it was embellished, and it was to sort of be for
sensationalized.
Fun.
Sensationalized. Yeah. And then I, Paramount allowed my husband and I to have a private screening. Of the movie.
Okay.
And then Jordan and I took our son to a private screening because he was 17 at the time. And so we thought it would be best first if he saw it with us.
Right. Okay. And everybody, what did your husband think?
He, you know, it was, we watched it and, you know, of course we're like, oh my God, oh my God. And then he looks at me, he's like, it wasn't that bad.
No. And I well, was like, it was
no,
great.
It wasn't.
It must not have been great being your life, but it was a great movie.
Yeah. And also the way they portrayed me, you know, was fine.
Right.
Like, I just look like a young girl who loved her children, who was chasing this maniac around.
Right. But that must have been hard, because how old were you when the movie came out at this point?
So I'm 45 because I was just getting my doctorate
okay.
when it came out.
So did you feel like that was going to affect your credibility as someone who is now going to be a doctor?
I did. Yeah. I was like, who the hell is going to want to come to me for therapy? But then I have a really good practice of surrendering mm-hmm. into things that are bigger than me. And I just thought, you know what? It's going to be okay. And it ended up being fantastic, right? So a lot of the things that we worry about ends up turning out okay.
Yeah. So you decided you wanted to become a psychologist?
I'm a licensed marriage marriage and family therapist.
Okay.
And then I got my doctorate in somatic psychotherapy.
Great. So did you know going into it that you wanted to help people that were suffering in relationships
no.
in general?
Okay. I had no idea.
Talk to me about how you found that path.
Yeah. So when I really just wanted to become a therapist because therapy had helped me so much mm-hmm. when I was married to Jordan. I know it probably saved my life. And so at 39, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to school and be a therapist. And I just went, and I just wanted to help people that were suffering, because I know what an amazing gift psychotherapy is.
Yeah.
I want to help people with anxiety and depression and personality disorders, and couples, of mm-hmm. course, and families. But then, you know, Jordan gave me the best gift with that book and movie, mm-hmm. because people started to come to me that had been in abusive relationships. And I just saw woman after woman after woman. And I know men get abused too, so I don't want to take away from that. But mm-hmm. the people that I was seeing, and what the research really demonstrates, it's mainly women.
Right.
And so I'm a big researcher. And I said, I'm going to go back to the research and learn about who the men are, who the women are, and what exactly is happening.
Yeah.
And then I did that. And then it just overtook my life.
Right.
But it wasn't a plan.
Yeah. Okay. So here's where I want to get into what you talk about now, because I think that's really important. First of all, what you do on your social media, is it The Real Nadine? Is that your handle?
The Real Dr. Nadine.
Okay.
Yes.
So people should definitely, you know, follow you there, because you talk all the time and do videos all the time about
yes.
certain things that I think can relate to almost anybody.
Yes.
So you talk a lot about trauma bonding. Explain yes. the definition of that, please.
Okay, so a trauma bond is a dysfunctional relationship. I'm gonna talk about it between two lovers, mm-hmm. right? Where one of the people is emotionally, verbally, physically abused, psychologically abused, and they stay bonded to that person. Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes it a trauma bond is it has to have two conditions. The first thing is a power imbalance.
Okay.
Right, so one of the partners has to have like a lot of power in the decision making, or they gain a lot of power by threatening, dominating, and intimidating their lover and making them fearful.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is intermittent abuse, meaning they're nice to their partner 25 to 35% of the time, but they're cruel, coercively, controlling, manipulative, and also often betray them 65 to 75% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what the research shows, which is really important to understand, is that it's the intensity of both of those experiences, the good and the bad,
mm-hmm.
that actually create the bonds, because that makes you bond to a person more, ironically, than just straight kindness.
Meaning those ups and downs are creating this, oh my God, you don't want me, I need you to want me,
yes.
like this back and forth of
yes.
good times, bad times,
yes.
is what's bonding you
it's
together.
It's actually what they did research with animal trainers,
mm-hmm.
and they found that the animal trainers that use intermittent abuse, the animals bonded to them 230% more.
Wow.
Right. So when everybody says, like, why doesn't she leave? Or it's a very deep psychological process.
Right, right. So when you're talking about this kind of situation, most
yeah.
people, I think, are thinking in their head, this is a narcissist that
yes.
usually is the person
yeah.
of power.
Yes.
I feel like there's a lot of misunderstanding around
yes.
the label of narcissism.
Completely.
It's talked about on every Bravo show. You know what
yes,
I mean? Everybody
yes.
is like, oh, that person's a narcissist. She's a narcissist. He's a narcissist. you know, what is a narcissist?
Well, yeah. So, you know, the character, the person who I call them a pathological lover.
Okay.
And the reason why I do that is because pathological means mentally unwell.
Mm.
So the pathological lover is also very complex. If they were just a narcissist, that would be awesome. They're not just a narcissist.
Right.
Yes, they're self-absorbed. They're into their image often. They're selfish. But they also usually have Machiavellianism.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they're highly manipulative, right? They usually have some form of psychopathy, meaning they're callous and insensitive. Some of them even have sadism, which is they enjoy getting hurting people that are close to them. So under that umbrella, we call that the dark tetrad.
Mm.
So I don't ever just say narcissist. I mean, I do to appeal to my office, my audience, but it's
yeah.
much deeper. Let's go further.
Yeah.
They usually have a compulsive process addiction, like sex or gambling. They also have impulsivity. They also can have substance abuse, right? And they also can have a mood disorder, anxiety, depression, or bipolar.
Right.
So there's like seven different layers in this person.
Right. Okay. Now, do these narcissists know
yeah.
that they are so, that they have this label? Are they acting out intentionally, I guess, is my question. Because I hear you talk a lot about don't leave this person and let them know you're leaving.
Yes.
You know, are these people doing these things to you because they're like, I'm going to have control. I'm going to put my finger on this person, not let them leave. Are they aware of what they're doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So intention is a huge word because I do believe they intentionally do it.
You do?
Yes, because even if they don't know that they're intentionally doing it, they're doing it to have control. Mm. Because at the bottom of abuse, psychological, mental, verbal, emotional, financial, spiritual, is control.
Mm-hmm.
So coercive control is what they want. I mean, they want control and they get it coercively.
But do you think that has to do with, like, in simple terms, if they're just thinking about it, is it like their self-esteem is so low, so they want you to feel bad about yourself? If they think that you're, you know, you need them because they don't feel needed by people and it makes them feel better, like, where does that actually come from?
So Lindsay Bancroft, who's one of my idols, and he wrote a book, Why Does He Do That? And he's worked with these men for over 20 years, mm-hmm. so he really knows these men better than any of us. And he said there are three reasons. I'm laughing because they're simple.
Mm-hmm.
They feel superior,
mm-hmm.
they're entitled, and they have no moral compass. And the way I describe it is that this sort of person will use, exploit, and betray people that they love to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status.
Right. So if they don't realize that this is how their behavior is affecting other people,
yeah.
or how they are emanating who they are, how do they get help?
Well, first of all, they have to want to get help,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
I mean, don't you think that eventually they'd see that a lot of their relationships are falling apart or people are accusing them of being a narcissist or,
yeah.
you know, I'm sure they have all sorts of excuses and blame the other person. But,
yes.
You know, how do we change someone who has those traits?
Yeah, so
how do they change? We can't
you said
change
something
them.
Important there. Well, listen, I wouldn't be a therapist if I didn't think most people can change right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of theorists and clinicians, you know, believe they can't change.
Yeah.
I believe they can. I've seen it. Okay, not everybody, but I think if people want to change, they can change.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes usually a, you know, the hard thing about pathological lovers is they don't usually hit rock bottom.
Right.
right. So they're not always like, oh, I want to change. And some of them stay very wealthy. And if money is their God, you know, you have to remember, I forgot to mention, they're antisocial in a way. Like you and I probably, our relationships are everything in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very pro-relational person.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are worth everything to me, right?
Yeah.
To them, relationships don't mean the same thing.
Right.
So we think
they're disposable.
Yeah, we think that they're looking at us the same way we're looking at them, and they're not.
Right.
So listen, I would say get therapy if you're with somebody and, you know, you believe they're like this or have some of the traits. You know, use your leverage. Demand that they go to therapy.
And how, you know, you mentioned that with your current husband, you finally felt heard. How would you get someone to hear you, you know, when you're constantly trying to fight for yourself or what you're trying to say? How do you have someone that is not mentally well? How do you get them to hear you?
You know, I mean, that's really tricky. It's you can't really make anybody do anything. I mean, the only person that we can control is ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I know one thing that they do respond to when they kind of realize you really don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
They can get really scared and change.
Interesting. So that could be a version of their rock bottom.
Yeah. When they see you don't really need them and you can be independent and live your life and financially, emotionally, spiritually, physically, that can wake them up.
Right. Because a lot of that control is they think that you can't function without them.
Right.
Whether it's their money, their sex, their emotional support, whatever it is, their
it
home.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that I've seen.
Mm. Okay, so now let's talk about someone that is the victim.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of this up and down because a lot of these people don't see themselves as a victim yet. They think that they're just in arguments. They have
yes.
come from different experiences.
Right.
They make excuses for
yes.
their partner. You know, how do you think, what are the first steps that people are, that they will start to see this isn't right and maybe this isn't a healthy relationship? Because as you talked about, you loved Jordan, yes. right? When you met yes. him, there were good parts to him.
Of course.
So I think that, I mean, is it true that people hold on to those good parts and make excuses for the bad?
Yeah, hope is the hook. Mm. Hope is the hook. Because you have to remember, a trauma bond starts out with promises of love and tenderness, right? And so we believe that the person can be good because that's how it starts out. Plus, they do throw that 25 to 15% of good stuff in.
Yeah.
Right? They sprinkle it in. So that keeps us hooked. Mm-hmm. But I think when you start to realize that you're feeling crazy, the conversations don't make sense. You know the person's a pathological liar and can lie straight to your face. Or when you see that you're deeply hurt by some of their behavior and they don't have remorse or empathy mm-hmm. or compassion for you, mm-hmm. right? So these are all the signs that you're not dealing with a person that can actually love you.
Right, and then at some point you need to love yourself enough yeah. that you're like, I'm not gonna be cheated on, I'm not gonna be lied to, I'm not gonna right. just accept this, and I'm right. gonna make a change, whether that's asking for that person to get help or it's actually leaving.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously very difficult. So why do you think that people, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but why is it so hard? You said there's an emotional connection that yeah. eventually will get broken. But, you know, you hear a lot of these people talk about how even they get physically abused by people yes. and they stay. Why yes. do people stay? Well, like, what's the research on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, the research is that, you know, first, when someone threatens you, humiliates you, degrades you, dominates you, mm. it's not like a one incident. It's a slow burn over time. And they're really conditioning you to fear. They're really conditioning you to fear them, mm. to feel like you do need them. And so it can be very hard then to unglue yourself from them. Plus, there's something called cognitive dissonance, which is one of the number one symptoms of a trauma bond. And cognitive dissonance is, it's the mental uncomfort that you feel from holding two conflicting ideas, right? So he's good, he's bad. Am I crazy? Am I good? Is the relationship good or bad? So you have three sets of good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, ping-ponging around in your brain the whole time, mm-hmm. and it stops you from seeing things clearly.
Right.
Right? Because yeah. it actually activates neural activity in our brain to have all those conflicting ideas always bouncing around. And often we feel shame, so then we isolate.
Right.
So we have nobody challenging us and saying, hey, like, this isn't right.
Yeah. Now, there are people that are not good at reading red flags.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah, well, aren't we all? And but, you know, your friends will always be like, that's a red flag, that's a red flag. Sometimes red flags are a joke because there's mm-hmm. just too many and you'll never be in a relationship.
Right.
Can you name three red flags that should be deal breakers for people?
Yeah, so one of the first ones is boundaries.
Okay.
Right, yeah. So if you try to set boundaries with somebody and they just plow through them and don't listen to them, that's a big red flag.
Right. Meaning, don't do this. I don't like it when you do this. And they just ignore you.
Right. Or I'll give you an example. So when I first met Jordan, I didn't want to have a baby. I was just too young. I love my children. I want to have babies. Yeah. And he was like, you're going to have a baby now. I'm like, I'm not going to have a baby now. And he like forced me. Like he would right. not respect my boundary. I mean, right. and that's a life decision.
Sure.
Right, so that should have been.
Or even getting married that soon.
Yeah, like that should have been a red flag. Yeah. But I didn't understand that
but
at the moment.
But did you think like, oh, he just loves me
yeah,
so much?
Yeah, I was just like, oh, he just loves me so much. Right. Yes, I did think that. Also, when someone really comes to you and says, really complains about their ex and says their ex was the craziest person on the planet and da-da-da-da-da, that's another red flag.
So explain that, because I will tell you, I know this one very well. you know, I have learned in my old age that, yeah. I'm 48, I've been in a lot of relationships. When a man talks badly about the mother of their child
yes.
or their ex,
yes.
I don't even respect that. Like, I think that is so awful because, right. I mean, I know plenty of men that'll say, listen, we don't get along, but I pay the child support because I love my child, or, you know, yes. I don't need to speak to them, but I, you know, I care about them because they, you know, are, they were in a relationship with me, or they gave me a child. I think those are qualities that you should look for somebody who right. may have a difficult time with their of ex, because that's why we're not with them, because of we course. Don't get along. But if they can speak kindly, even when they don't want to, that is a good person.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I have been, you know, I have an ex who speaks horribly about me to all of his new women.
Yeah.
And, you know, then each one of them ends up disliking me because of that. And then later when they break up, say, I didn't realize that now he's doing
exactly.
this to me. And it goes on and on and on. You can see those patterns with people.
Yes.
And I find that is really, you know, unattractive in a person now going forward.
Yes.
So that to me is a good red flag.
Yes, yes, yes. And anybody who's you think has a substance abuse issue, don't ignore that.
Yeah.
Because
that'll eventually be a problem.
Yeah, that can eventually really snowball.
Yeah.
Those are three really important things to look for.
And maybe people that have their own addiction problems should try and not be with someone who can enable that
right.
in you, because that'll just turn into a snowball.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
I want to talk about, you know, this isn't just in sexual relationships. This
Correct.
Can be in the workplace. Mm-hmm. This can be with
yes.
parents.
Mm-hmm.
How do you identify it? How do you live? Like, so living with a boss that's narcissistic or a parent, a mother or father, is really hard because you can't get away. You don't want to lose your job.
That's correct.
And these are your parents. You're stuck with them.
Yes.
How do you deal with stuff that you cannot just walk away from?
Right. Well, first of all, you know, you have to get educated and understand all, you know, the things that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have education, you can really, allows you not to personalize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, most of the times, the way a person treats us initially really has nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
And more to do with them. And
that's really important for people to hear.
Yeah. Really important. So,
yeah.
I mean, one of the things that makes us pessimistic is personalizing things.
Mm-hmm.
And really, all you can do with somebody like that is be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're with a dominating person, I mean, parents and children are totally different subjects. But if you're with a dominating boss, you know, if you rebel against them, it's still about them. If you please them, it's still about them.
Mm.
But if you come from your authentic self time and time again, you're not self-sacrificing and you're not self-abandoning, which will probably allow you to stay in that dynamic.
Right. Okay.
Because they're everywhere, right?
They seem to be.
They also have to figure out. We also have to figure out how to live in the world.
Mm-hmm. I have a personal question for you about me. You know, I have a parent who I would say is abusive in that way, but only to me. Everyone thinks that they are just the most amazing person. Mm-hmm. They don't see it, but to me, I feel gaslit. Or growing up, you know, I felt gaslit. I felt misunderstood. I felt like, you know, I was, you know, ridiculed almost. Like I had to live with a lot of shame from mm-hmm. how they made me feel. But I felt like no one else saw that, or at least came to my aid, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was really hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a real thing, that they have that personality or those traits with you as their child, as opposed to that's how their personality is with everyone? Could that be
sure,
a thing?
Sure, because with people close to us, our attachment system gets activated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's also gonna give us a different experience of engaging with people,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like I'm different with the guy at the supermarket than I am with my husband and my children.
Right.
Right? The guy at the supermarket can't get me mad,
right.
really.
Right.
They can, right? Because I care about them.
Mm-hmm.
So that can happen because their attachment system and your attachment system, you're attached to each other and it
mm-hmm.
gets activated for sure.
And I think that's why people have a hard time at holidays, Thanksgiving, they go back home and all of a sudden they revert back to being a 14-year-old person in their parents' house and it ends up being so miserable because they express those same patterns they had when they were a kid and their parent treats them.
Yes,
like
they regress.
That.
They regress. Yeah. And it's horrible when it's a parent because the child really is a victim,
mm-hmm.
right? They can't escape and they do feel a lot of shame and self-blame when the parent does that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. No, I've spent many years dealing with it. So, you know, I've realized that I need to react differently.
Yeah.
Is how I have learned to cope with it.
Right.
Because I was very, what's the word, reactionary. I would always.
You would react instead of respond.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I would just feel like it was affecting other people around me, not just that one relationship.
Right.
You know, because I would become so angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, then it was like, well, God, you're such an angry person. You have to, you know, deal with your anger. And I would be like, no, I'm just angry at you, you know, about how you're treating me. So
yes,
be this
you're not an angry person. Right. And that brings us to a really important point about the victim in a trauma bond. You know, if somebody betrays you and lies to you and pokes you enough and is emotionally abusive and exploits you, you're going to get angry.
Right.
Right. Oh, you're eventually, I hope you get angry.
Right.
Right. And that's reactive anger. That's different than proactive anger. That's intentional to hurt somebody.
Right.
But the thing is that even if you're valid in your anger, as you know, you become the crazy person.
Right. Right. Always.
Yeah. So it's better to just ground, stay calm, recognize what's happening, mm-hmm. and make a choice in how you're going to respond.
Yeah. And also, as you said, have boundaries. Just like, I don't need to talk to this person anymore.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to talk to them about those things that get us into these types of arguments.
That's correct. I always say I have a rule. You have to be kind to me and you have to have my best interest at your heart.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
a
then
good
I
rule.
Can have those. Then I can have a relationship with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what are some signs or good pieces of advice to get into a healthy relationship?
That's a nice one. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I wrote my book is to also educate women on getting to know themselves. You know, understand how your early developmental trauma affected you, if you had some. Mm-hmm. We've all had some, mm-hmm. right? Because nobody's parents are perfect. Mm-hmm. So that teaches you about your attachment system. Learn about your personality. Really become educated about yourself. And what defenses do you use in love, right? Do you have anxious attachment when somebody isn't responsive to you? Do you go, oh my God, I need you.
Right.
Or if somebody's not responsive, do you have avoidant attachment? You know, leaning out. So I think it's very important to learn about yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to, then when you meet people, listen to your body. You know, our true self lives in our body. Our ego really lives in our minds, and our defenses are in our minds. So mm-hmm. trust your body. How does your body feel with that person? How does your gut feel? Don't override that little intuitive voice that's actually a very big, powerful voice that says, don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't feel right. Follow how you feel. Don't second guess yourself.
Yeah. So what would you say for people that are used to or overcome with these love bombers, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I will go on a date, and if I don't feel some like spark, or, you know, I'm more aware of it now, but oh my God, we feel like we've known each other forever.
Yeah.
I can date this, you know, but they become an automatic boyfriend by the end of the night, and I'll date them for 3 years. But like, if that doesn't happen,
yeah.
I tend to be like, I'm not into this person, and I don't give them, you know, a shot. I become a shredder. I'm like, that's it. I'll move on to the next one. So how does someone get out of that pattern of, you know, seeing this intensity where they know that it's okay to go on 4 dates or something to find an intensity?
Right, right. You know, I think in this country, we have to recognize that it's okay to be drama free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay.
Right.
It's okay to feel a little boring.
Right.
It's okay, because that means your life is peaceful. And so, you know, yes, of course you want to be, you know, physically attracted to somebody. I mean, that's a very important piece of it. But
you'll become more attracted to them physically
over time.
As you get to know them and you like them.
Exactly.
As a person.
Exactly. And I would say, you know, we have to give people chances. We have to give people a chance to get to know them. I mean, they say it takes 7 years to even fully get to know somebody.
Right.
So we have to give somebody more than one date. And, you know, how do they treat you? Do they come pick you up? Are they kind to you? Do they text you the next day? Mm-hmm. Are they inquisitive? Mm-hmm. Do they ask you questions about you? Or are they just sitting there, you know, talking about themselves nonstop?
Right.
What's the relationship with their mother, if they have children, with their children, right?
Yeah. So I actually think that's a great point, that you should start to look at the qualities that that person possesses,
yes,
instead of, oh, they made me feel known. You know, they made, yes, me feel understood. I felt like this, yes, sexual chemistry at dinner. Those are not the things that should be a priority the first couple times meeting.
No,
maybe.
And it should then be about who they are. If it does happen, that's great. But, yeah, right, you want to get to know, who is this person as much as you can sitting across from me? And you do get to know that by, if they're curious, and you being curious about their relationships that they currently have.
Yes, right. That's a very good point. What would you say to people that have bad pickers? A lot of us are, yeah, used to picking the wrong person over and over and over again.
You know, I hate that term because I just think, again, it puts the onus on the person who's intentionally wants to love.
Mm-hmm.
Again, get to know yourself, learn the red flags, right? Get educated, and then just get curious. You know, mm-hmm, a lot of times we shame ourselves, but get curious, like, okay, what's the pattern here? How are these people behaving initially?
Right.
And then I end up feeling incredibly hurt.
Right.
Right.
Do you believe in people that are manifesting things, that are saying positive things to themselves, and that will put it in the universe?
I'm not like the biggest manifester. I'm really into hard work and grit.
Yeah.
But of course, I think the way we speak to ourselves is highly important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being compassionate with yourself. Not like, oh, God damn it, you picked an asshole again. You know, it's like, you know what? You tried.
Yeah.
You're trying.
Right.
You know, dating nowadays, I know from all my patients, is so hard.
Very.
You know, the internet changed the world.
Yeah,
and
everyone can get something better,
yes,
by just opening their phone. So,
yes,
It's very difficult. Those dating apps make
so
it hard.
So I just say, like, if you're dating, good for you.
Yeah. And also, I think it's important to realize you're not going to marry everyone you date. So dating is just that. You can go from one to the next. I mean, you don't need to have sex with everybody and become an addict of certain, you know, sorts. But I think it's important to try people on, see what makes you happy. But, you know, even my daughter said to me, Mom, you're dating again, somebody new again. And I'm like, I don't even date that much. But, you know, I had to explain to her, but it's not a fail if they don't work.
No.
It's not. You're just meeting new people,
and
trying out new personalities and seeing what works and what doesn't. And hopefully you learn from your mistakes that you've made every time.
Yes, yes, yes. And I always tell my patients to take the pressure off of them. I said, we're just going to be in a relational lab.
Mm.
The world is now your relational lab, and you're going to go experiment.
Right. Right.
Right. To take this pressure off them that we always have to get it right and we can't fail. We can't make mistakes. We can't get rejected. That's inevitable.
Yeah.
That just means you're trying.
Yeah. And I think it's also important for people to remember you are okay in the space you're at now. No one's in a hurry to get remarried, married for the first time, have kids, you know, all this stuff. I think it's important to try to be happy with where you are in your life, because somebody else is not going to fill your happiness.
No.
I mean, that's the lesson we've all learned as you get older.
Yes.
That unless you're happy, you know, someone else cannot be responsible for your happiness.
Yeah. The only thing that I deal with my patients, and I really feel for so many women with this, is our biological clocks
in
children.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it gets tricky.
Absolutely.
Because that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. You know, actually being in menopause myself and understanding the intense, the way that hormones affect us.
Yeah.
You know, so that I do have so much compassion for women that are feeling that clock tick.
Right. Okay. That's a good point. All right. Talk about your book. You have a book coming out in January called Run Like Hell.
Yes.
What is it?
So Run Like Hell is a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
That I wrote because I went back to the research, and it's Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide for Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. So what I do is in the first section, I describe four trauma-bonded couples.
Okay.
Right? Because nobody just wants to read a book with all clinical terms.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see yourself in one of the couples. I explain the pathological lover, and then I explain what a trauma bond is. Then in the second section of the book, I explain the personality of the woman. I explain how the emotional scars that we get from trauma bonds,
mm-hmm,
how to leave safely. And then the third section is all how to heal.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And it's available for pre-order now?
It's available for pre-order on Amazon. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I said to my husband, if I ever say I'm going to write another book, like lock me in my room because I will. It was incredibly hard.
How long did it take you?
Oh, God. It took me years.
Did it? Wow.
Yeah, it took me years because if you came into my office, you would just see like papers and books and just research like everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I'm pulling from research. And I mean, I think it's like 60,000 words, and it's hard to make 60,000 words, each one good.
Right, of course. What would you say, you know, because again, people mostly know your life story from this movie.
Yes.
What is one thing that you would say people don't know from watching that movie about your relationship with Jordan or just relationships in general, like we're discussing?
Yeah, that the movie doesn't show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the movie shows, well, listen, it's a comedy, mm-hmm. right? So, which I understand that. I don't think it really showed the deep pain that I was in. Mm. And that's okay. I mean, it wasn't made from my perspective, right?
Yeah.
But to fall in love with someone and have this hope of sharing a life with them and then just watching it year after year unravel and get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. Was extraordinarily painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, had many moments where life brought me to my knees.
Right.
And so it probably wouldn't be as humorous mm-hmm. to show that, but it was scary as fuck too.
Yeah, do you have any regrets?
Not one.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, no, because I have my beautiful children and my daughter's a therapist and she just gave birth, so I have a beautiful grandson and my son's a musician and I have 3 beautiful stepdaughters. So life turned out good. That doesn't mean still not, life is always going to throw shit at you.
Of course.
But that's why if you go to therapy and get resourced, you build resilience.
If you had to give one piece of advice to our listeners or like what would you say to your kids about relationships, something you learned along the way?
Well, I know that relationships are what make life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They are what, I mean, I could almost cry as I say it. Like, I just know that they're what make life worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, they're the most important thing to get a return on investment from.
Mm-hmm.
And to really surround yourself with people that are kind to you and love you, albeit imperfect, but have the right intention to care for you. Because when you love somebody, you hate to see them suffer.
Yeah.
Right. And to have people around you that feel like that.
Right.
I think it's really important.
And I think what's really important, too, is being able to get the help from someone like you to know when it's right to give up on someone.
Yes.
And when to put yourself first or mm-hmm. when the relationship can sustain these issues.
Yes.
And when you shouldn't give up on a relationship.
Right.
And I think the only way you can know that, to know the level of how toxic it is or whatever, as if you know yourself. And if you get the help from a professional to help you make that decision.
Yes, and therapy, is a game changer and a lifesaver. And I know it can be expensive, but I always want to say this. To become a licensed therapist, I had to do 3,000 hours,
mm-hmm.
right? And I did that for $10 an hour.
Yeah.
So if you do want therapy, look up in your state where the interns are. The people who are training are, because mm-hmm. they're at centers everywhere. And that makes it a lot more accessible for people to get that help.
Right. Okay, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
Okay, so they can find me at The Real Dr. Nadine on Instagram mm-hmm. and then my TikTok, which is a whole crazy wild west out there, is Dr. Nay, NAELMFT.
Great.
Yes.
And they can get your book. And and do you read your DMs if people
want
to?
I do.
Okay.
I answer every single direct message myself.
Amazing. Good to know. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm sure that you have been a huge help to our listeners. And actually, one last question. What would you say is the most misunderstood thing about people in toxic relationships?
What's the most misunderstood? That they're weak. They're the strongest, most creative women I've ever met.
I love that answer. Dr. Ney, thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro. Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.